You're listening to Radio Rehab, the most informative substance abuse program on the airways. Your host is Lisa Seif, who's the director of the Ward County Court Substance Abuse Program. You can pick up the phone right now and give Lisa a call at 812-424-1400. Or if you're outside of Evansville, it's 1-888-846-7867. Radio Rehab. And now, here's Lisa Seif.
My guest today is Jose. He has been in the Ward County Drug Court now for less than a year, and he is doing beautifully in the program. He wants to share and wants the community to hear as well about his struggles with substance abuse and now his recovery. He is from the Hispanic culture. He's proud of his culture and came to America when he was 6 years old, learned the language, and his family is in business here and gives a lot to the community. So he's going to share his culture with us, how he views alcoholism and drug issues, et cetera, et cetera. Don't hesitate to call 424-1400 if you have any questions for Jose or myself. Nothing's below the belt. We want to answer any questions or concerns that you may have or any sharings. So don't hesitate to call in, and I am going to be quiet now and let Jose tell us his story. He's 25 and an incredible man, so I'm anxious to hear him, and I know you will be too. Good morning, Jose. How are you?
Good morning. How's everybody doing out there? I'm doing good. Beautiful day to be clean and sober.
Yes, it is, and Martin Luther King, especially another civil rights issue here. Wow.
That's true.
Well, tell us a little about you and when you came to America, a little about your story.
Well, I was born in Mexico, 1984. Growing up, you know, I had a fair neighborhood. Parents liked the normal. They worked all the time. And, dad worked. I stayed with mom most of the time. It's just funny how, I grew up in Mexico, but I never got introduced to drugs or drinking while I was down there. We moved here. You know, about middle school is when everything started happening. My dad was at work most of the time, so he was never around to take me to games or nothing. So I just started hanging out with the people around my apartment complex and just started doing what they were doing. And they thought, since I was Mexican, I knew everything about weed. So they, you know, I decided to try it, and that was a big life change because it just made me feel different. And if I was gonna be home sitting at home bored, you know, I might as well go out there and use with those kids. And it was just a different change for me, and I adapted to it so quick that I started liking it.
So you like the feeling?
I like the feeling,
the effect,
yeah,
right off the bat.
Fact. And
what about that it was illegal? You knew it would disappoint your parents and other adults. Does that even play into your mind?
It did go through my mind, but my thing was everybody's doing it, so, mm-hmm. You know, it's natural. I thought it was natural at the time. I knew it was illegal, but, you know, we weren't driving at the time or nothing. And sometimes when you see little kids like that running around, I mean, 13 years old, you don't really think much.
About legal.
Yeah. You think they're just having fun, but, you know, we were having a different kind of fun.
Can I back up you, if you don't mind, just saying a little about this? You said people thought it was almost expected of you because in the Hispanic or Mexican culture, marijuana
is a big thing.
Is it?
Yes.
So that is true.
And there's some parts of Mexico that's legal, but where I come from, it's a small town. The only thing that's known there is drinking. And it's weird how down there, if you're an alcoholic, it's okay. But if you're a drug addict, it's not okay. There's no tolerance for that. And that's just, you know, it's
kind of that way still in America, I think, too.
Yeah, but, you know, they just
drinkers
think
we can hire. Drug addicts, we're not going to hire.
They think a drinker might respect you more than a drug addict. But, I mean, sometimes it's all the same if we look at it
from an addiction standpoint, definitely.
And, you know, I continue using. My grades started going down, but my mom was, you know, she didn't know English, so she didn't really know how to read the report card. She never asked for it. My dad was too busy with work, so he didn't have time to check my grades. So that just,
jeez.
Yeah, that gave me a big, you
lot
know,
of freedom.
A lot of freedom. And they would send notes home that my mom had to sign, and I would tell her there were field trip slips.
Oh,
and she would sign them.
And, oh, my God.
So I got away with a lot of things, and that kind of affected me later on in life, because when I started getting serious trouble, there was no more getting away with things, you know. There wasn't take this to mom and have her sign. Mm-hmm. It was call mom, you're going to jail.
Ooh.
And that just, she just, when they started finding out later on, I was in middle school, got kicked out.
You got kicked out of middle school?
Yeah, they found some weed on me.
You must have scared that school half to death.
Yeah, it was scary, but the guys that knew me knew that they just said, oh, well, sorry about his luck, you know?
Yeah.
And, so I got transferred to a different school because I wasn't living in the same county lines. So the
schools were in on you by then. Your parents may not have been, but the schools had your
number.
Well,
that's when my parents started, like, well, how did this happen? And I didn't know. And at that time, I was like, well, if you guys would have paid attention to me more when I was young. So I started bringing up the past.
Mm.
And
that good old teenage manipulation.
So then I started acting good, and they probably thought, I changed. And
mm-hmm. Get them off your back for a little while.
Get them off my back and just continue doing what I need to do. And, I sneak around behind my parents' back and do it, and stole money from them so I could buy it. And that's just the way I was living my life. Also, drinking was not a big part of my life till I was in high school. And when I was in high school, I was my junior year. I got involved drinking. I was doing weed, and then people introduced me to cocaine. And that's when it really hit the roof. I just didn't care about school, my grades no more. I dropped out. My dad was, either you go to school or you work for me full-time. So I decided to work for him full-time, which that was a big mistake because now I was getting more money from working.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then since I worked for him, he allowed me to stay out on weekends because, oh, he's been working hard, you know. So then the weekends is when, it messed me up. I'd be drinking all night.
Wow.
Then you're too drunk to drive home, so you need a wake-up call. But then sometimes I wouldn't make it home for 3 days. And, I just lie to them. I'd tell them I was staying at my friend's and do that. Just tell them I was going to stay there. And my dad was like, well, aren't you embarrassed to stay at other people's houses? And I was like, well, no, people here are different. They understand. Because in Mexico...
Yeah, we're not sleeping anyway, Dad. We're stoned on cocaine all night.
Are.
So who's sleeping?
So it's
so you had that double life going.
Yes.
Working all week and getting money. And
no. Then I started hanging out with my brother. And
was he older?
He's, I was, 19 at the time. He was 24. And he was a big cocaine user. And, we started hanging out. We liked it. The funny thing is he's never gotten in trouble with any of this. So my parents have him, a high expectation for me. They were like, oh, yeah, Jose's hanging out with him now. He's doing good. Because my brother was quiet. He never got in trouble. He did all his using in his house. And then one night...
So his using didn't bring a lot of attention to himself yours did.
And it kind of made me mad because, I was all the tension.
Uh-huh, you were the scapegoat.
But, he's big brother. I'm not going to tell on him. Mm-hmm. So then we start using. One night... I remember he said it was his last time because he was trying to get his life together. So we partied that night. We both used the same amount of cocaine. We went home that night, and, I was like, I'm going to need a ride to work tomorrow. And he's like, well, I'll stay here at my mom's house, which was me and him. He was going to spend the night there. In the morning, he was going to wake me up, take me to work. About 9 a.m., my mom runs in the room. She's like, I can't wake up your brother. I figure, he's probably hungover from the night before. And I knew he took some Xanax so he could sleep. So I figure he took too many. He's passed out. I'll wake him up. So I ran downstairs, and I was trying to wake him up. And I looked at his fingernails. They were yellow. He had died. And I called 911. We were trying to get an ambulance there. And they told me to do CPR and all this. But I couldn't do CPR because... his tongue was like stuck in the back of his throat, so
He was already.
He died gasping for air.
Oh my God!
So that was a big impact. You know, my mom was on the floor smacking him, saying, "I know you're alive, baby. Come back. Wake up. Wake up." And my parents, you know, it hurt them a lot. It hurt me too because we were real close, and we figured that my family figured that that would be a wake up call for me, and it would, you know, open my mind and make me realize what I could end up. You know, how I could end up, but that, I don't know, just the way I was thinking.
It escalated it, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I did feel bad, but I continued using more and drinking more, and I just...
I think that's what's so baffling to our families and society and to law enforcement. You think this should get this person's attention. They don't understand when you have an addicted mind, it escalates the addiction. It doesn't de-escalate it.
Yes, it does.
And then you must have felt even guiltier. Here you were leaving the funeral, getting blown away again.
Oh, yeah. It was, you know, just...
Oh, how painful.
This disease does progress if you let it. And
do you think your brother's death really boosted your disease into the chronic stages?
Because it was just... I was mad and... I was just, my question was, why him, why not me, you know, now I look bad from my family because we were together that night. So it just, it made my disease worse.
Sure.
And that's when I started getting my DUIs. And
kind of gave up on following any law.
Yeah, I really didn't, you know, and I was like, I'd rather be in Mexico where there is laws, but you can pay your way out of trouble. And it was a big impact in my life. And the thing is, I wanted to get clean because I knew what I was doing wasn't going to get me nowhere. I just didn't know how. Mm-hmm. And another thing, my culture, it's different. Like, my family thinks that you don't need help to get clean. Like, if you got yourself in this mess, you can get yourself out of it. So they just... You know, if I went out and called for help, they would have looked at me like, is he crazy? What is he doing? All he needs to do is quit doing it. They think if you say, I had enough, I don't want no more, you can do it.
And on your own willpower.
On your own willpower. Yeah. But it doesn't work like that for every one of us.
It doesn't work like that with cancer or heart disease or diabetes or HIV. How would it work with any other illness like alcoholism and addictive disorders? But, yeah, I think society does expect... You should handle yourself better than that.
Yes.
And you thought that.
I did.
You know, like, what's wrong with me?
I was like, why can't I just drink normal like some of my family? You know, they drink, they go to work. But
do you think that's a cultural thing, Jose, in the Hispanic culture or African-American culture? Do you think that's also just about being a man?
Yeah, that's, you know, if you got to be a man in order to...
How can you let a bottle whip you or a powder whip you or a pot whip you?
You know, they look at it like, well, if you had, you know, you tried it yourself, you better leave it yourself. And if you're not a man, then you can't leave this on your own. And it impacts a lot of people, and that's why some people just don't ask for help, and they end up dying with this disease.
Graveyards full of people that are too proud to ask,
It's tough to get help. I mean, because I looked at it like, if I need to go get help, that's saying that I'm an alcoholic, I'm a druggie. And I used to look at alcoholics and druggies like, that's bad. You know, you don't want to end up there. That's the last low class. Mm-hmm. But I mean, really, when you look at it, now that I look at it, it's, if you're an alcoholic or a druggie, you're just like me, but or everyone else, but you can get
better.
Think different.
And, hey, it takes a lot of courage to admit it.
Oh, yes, it does.
And we hope Radio Rehab helps people hear that it can happen to anybody, any age, any gender, any culture.
I mean, you know.
Definitely.
You can avoid people, but, I mean, it's tough.
It's out there, isn't it?
These drugs are everywhere, so.
Yeah.
It's really tough to avoid it.
Well, let's take a break for commercials, and don't go away, everybody. We'll come back and take your questions and maybe hear more from Jose about what it's been like to be in recovery now. Be right back.
Hit me.
You're live in the den with Big Tigger.
Hey, what's happening? It's your man Big Tig, and I hope your 2010 is going well. But if it's not, make sure you check me out live in the den this weekend on your favorite radio station.
Check out Live in the Den with Big Tigger right here on 1400 every Saturday night from 6 until 9 p.m. and again from 2 a.m. till 5 a.m. Big Tigger, Live in the Den, right here on the pump.
Hey, you. Yeah, you listening to the radio. It's me again. Have you got that HIV test yet? As I mentioned before, if you have put yourself at risk by having unprotected sex with more than one person or used IV drugs, guess what? You've put yourself at risk for HIV. Make that appointment today by calling the Vandenberg County Health Department at 435-5683 or stop by 420 East Mulberry. It's that easy. Remember, everything is confidential. No one has to know you've gotten the test unless you tell them, so do it. What do you have to lose except maybe your life or your partner's life? When in doubt, get checked out.
In celebration of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., Ivy Tech Community College presents An Evening with George Taliaferro, Indiana University Football Hall of Fame player and the first African-American drafted by the NFL. Saturday, January 16th at Ivy Tech Community College at 3501 North 1st Avenue in Evansville. Beginning at 6:30, there will be a VIP reception with Mr. Taliaferro, including live jazz with Monty Skelton and delicious desserts by Just Rennie's. Tickets are $15 for a single and $25 a couple. Proceeds will be used to establish a scholarship honoring Mr. Taliaferro. Call 429-1408 for VIP tickets. The keynote address will be delivered by Mr. Taliaferro at 7:45. Admission is free, but seating is limited. Sponsored by Vectren.
You're listening to Radio Rehab, the most informative substance abuse program on the airways. Your host is Lisa Seif, who's the director of the Warrick County Court Substance Abuse Program. You can pick up the phone right now and give Lisa a call at 812-424-1400, or if you're outside of Evansville, it's 1-888-846-7867. Radio Rehab. And now, here's Lisa Seif.
Welcome back, everybody. We're having a great conversation with Jose, a young adult that has been in recovery for 7 months and hasn't had a drink, a joint, a line of cocaine, anything for that long. And he was just talking before break about how hard it is to ask for help, that he was raised in a culture where men don't ask for help. So let's talk more about that, Jose. How did you get past that asking for help issue?
Well, the only reason, I mean, I knew I wanted help, but I didn't want to ask for it. But then, you know, I ran into three DUIs, and judge said I needed help.
Yeah, that little nudge from the judge. Huh?
What I decided to do was, all right, you know, I'll give it a shot. I'll go into rehab. And my thinking was, I'm going to get out of rehab. I'm going to go to court, and judge is going to be like, he's a new man, let him go. But I go to court, and he's like, okay, you made it to rehab. Now you have to enter this drug court program. And I was like, but I don't have a problem. He's like, three DUIs is not a problem for you, man. I was like, okay, I guess you are, you know. And I was like, fine, I'll give it a try. And, you know, just doing what you guys asked me to do, I got me a sponsor. And I went to some meetings, and, I mean, I was still in there like, this ain't for me. But then...
Did you think you were just too young, or because you were Hispanic?
I thought I was too young, and my culture was different, so why did I have to do what you guys are doing? But then, I mean, my sponsor, I talked to him, gave me a lot of sense. I was like, dude, I don't have a problem. He's like, you think any normal person is going to end up in rehab if they don't have a problem? You know, he put some sense in my head. So I was like, well, you know, that is right. And he's like, just give it a try, you know. And we started working with him. And it takes a lot of, because, I mean, you can come and do these things trying to fly by them. Mm-hmm. And you're going to end up yourself in the same situation. And I look at it like this. You know, my whole life, I've been doing the same thing over and over. And I haven't changed. You know, for a minute, I thought I had it together. I had my car, I had my place, I had my job. But the only reason I had my car, my place, and my job, because my dad was paying for all that, you know? Mm-hmm. So that kind of...
Wasn't really about you.
Yeah, so my sponsor said, look at this. Take away your dad. What's that going to take away? And that made me look like I'm at rock bottom, you know? If my dad takes away my car, my house, and my job, because the only reason I kept my job because he was the boss. I really don't have nothing. So my sponsor was like, you need to do this for you, for your wife and your babies. And
reality check
reality,
for you,
you know?
Huh?
And that's another thing. Child support, they didn't come after me because my dad was paying for that because he don't want me to go to jail. But he also wants me to get clean. And
yeah.
He had a couple talks with me. And, you know, we do what kids do. Yes, Dad, no, I won't do it again. But here we go again.
And so, parents are so forgiving. They just don't want to.
Well, they love their child.
Absolutely.
They got to forgive them. But, you know, and then again, your uncles are like, if I was you, I'd let him in the street. And he's like, just worry when your kids come around. And then we'll see. But, I knew drug court was going to be 18 months, and I had to do something to change my way of thinking, or else I wasn't going to make it.
So do you think most people that do change eventually have to come to the reality that they need help?
Yeah, because
willpower ain't going to work.
No, if you do willpower, it might work, but sooner or later, you're going to run into a situation where you might run into someone, come on, have one drink, just one, it ain't going to hurt you.
And, especially in your age group.
I stopped drinking a lot when I was on my own. But, I mean, weekend came by, and I was like, one drink, you know, just so I can be social. And I had that drink, and I started all over again. Same place, drunk, couldn't drive home. And then here comes the cocaine. And then didn't make it home for 3 days, and just a lot of problems with family. And it's really tough, but...
But, you know, you said, and this resonates with me, that asking for help thing seems to be the key between those that make it and those that don't.
Yes.
It's that you got to be willing to ask for help and do it, what they tell you to do.
It is really important to ask for help. And, I mean, because we can't do this on our own. And when you ask for help, you know, you get someone that's hasn't drank. Been, you know, he's been clean for 3 years. He shows you what he did. He tells you what he done to stay clean. Mm-hmm. And it's up to you if you want to do that or not. He can't keep you clean, but he can help you. And it's good if you, you know, you worked your 12-step program. And it's a good feeling. I mean, when I first started going to these meetings.
Yeah, people don't go in those kicking and screaming with joy,
yeah,
do they?
I was like, this ain't for me. This ain't going to work.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's safe, fake it till you make it.
Hmm.
And it works.
That's true, fake it till you make it.
Because then somebody, one day, somebody will say, will tell their story, and you'll be like, man, that sounds just like me.
Mm-hmm.
And then he'll say, you know, I ain't drinking in 4 years. And then you're like, well, I want that, you know? That's
sure.
If he can
the magic
do it, why
of
can't
AA,
I?
Yeah.
Yes.
So what have been some of the biggest challenges for you in the past 7 months at maintaining your abstinence and recovery?
You know, the having to change people, places, and things.
Mm.
It was a little hard to let go of all my friends, but
especially at your age, 25, the party's just beginning.
But we had to look at it like, do I want to, you know, hang out with the friends, or do I want to stick to my two little babies and my girl?
And your friends in recovery.
Yes, and I made new friends now, and I know my friends in recovery, if there'll be some nights, they'll call me, let's go out and hit a meeting. I'm like, no. And they'll come and get me.
That's
no
great.
Matter what.
Because you've lost your license, haven't you?
Yes.
For how long?
5 years. I lost.
Jeez.
Habitual traffic offender. So.
Wow. That's quite a legal consequence.
Yeah, and it's hard to move around.
Without a license, yeah.
But, I mean, you know.
Are you going to be able to get it back?
We're working on that. Maybe a driver's permit.
So. With an interlock ignition?
Yeah. So. It's not nice, but hey, it's.
The drug court jewelry.
Yes. So.
Because you have a SCRAM unit on your
ankle,
too.
Yeah, I have a SCRAM unit.
Now, what does that do?
That bracelet, it reads through your pores, the sweat. So if you're drinking, that sweat can detect the alcohol. So. Really, I can't, you know, and that bracelet keeps me on my toes because any little alcohol amount that I put in my body, that bracelet is going to read it, and it's going to send the information to the office, and then I'm going to walk in there the next day. They don't even have to breathalyze me because they know I've been drinking. So it's really tough, but, you know, that was the point for me to be able to stay in drug court because they just looked at my record and they seen drinking was a big thing in my life, so...
Is drinking a big thing in the culture?
Yeah, because
Hispanic culture too.
Hispanic culture.
I know you
anytime,
hear that a lot, but
anytime there's a party, holiday, first thing they worry about is the booze. You know, make sure there's enough beer for cousin and sister and my
mom. Is there an age group?
No,
or is it any age?
I mean,
okay,
when
to
they
it?
Get together, there is no age. Usually they start drinking about 13 years old.
And you said you started at 6?
Well, my first drink was at 6 years old.
That's first grade.
Yeah, and that was...
Jeez.
That was, so I had 3 shots is all it took. I was dizzy. I remember... I didn't know at the time, but it was a blackout because I just lost control. Woke up in bed. I was crying. My mom said, you know, that's your hangover. Everything's going to be all right. She was mad.
And that they gave it to you? Or
yeah, that my brother and cousins let me drink. But they were scared, too, because when I think I blacked out, and then when they took me home, I was knocked out. So she scared them, telling them, oh, he's going to die. So they were all in church praying.
My goodness.
And, it was
and
just,
you remember that, six years old.
Yes.
So really, alcohol and drugs have been part of your life for 20 years.
Yeah.
But now 7 months recovery.
It's been
in the
7
center.
Months. It's I tell you what. It's I have my ups and downs.
Sure.
It's not easy, but you just as long as you. My big thing has been praying. I pray a lot.
Yeah.
And it's helping me. And if I have any problems or anything, I call my sponsor. And
so is that pretty much what you would recommend people do? Go to the meetings, call their sponsor, ask for help.
Ask for help. Don't be
pray.
You know, don't be embarrassed because we know what you're going through.
Mm-hmm.
And it's good when somebody asks you for help, you know. Hey, can you help me? You feel good because you're like, yeah, I can help you.
Absolutely.
And I used to think if I asked one of those guys for help, they're going to be like, well, that's not my problem.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It's good.
And, it's an honor to share and care about each other.
Is.
So in closing, where can people find Jose? Where could anybody that wants to call you or talk to you, they could call you here at the station, and I'll be sure they get an answer from Jose.
Yeah, call here. I can leave my number here.
And, we'll leave it here then. And what meetings could they catch you in?
They can catch me on Wednesday nights at MPAG. It's on Presbyterian Church, which is it's on First
downtown.
In Virginia.
Yeah.
And
Wednesday nights?
Monday nights, I go to Kiwanis. That's in Newburgh. Great meeting there.
Yeah.
I cheer on Monday nights. So
great. At Kiwanis?
Yeah. So if you need a paper signed, you can come to the meeting.
And Jose will get it signed.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
What a great guest to have. And with this, especially honoring Martin Luther King this weekend, the whole addiction issue is a civil rights issue as well. So glad to have you, Jose. Any last minute anything? Words of wisdom to leave?
I mean, if you're out there going through these problems and you know you need help but you don't know how to get help, man, just pick up the phone. I know it's heavy, but just dial the number. You can turn yourself into rehab. They'll help you out. Stepping Stones has a great facility. That's where I did all my rehab. Just, you know, don't be scared to call because in the long run it could do you better. And you know what you keep doing. You're going to end up in the same place, jail, hospital, or even dead. So just pick up the phone and call somebody before you get hurt.
Oh, great, Jose. And there are like 150 12-step meetings in the tri-state now a day, a week.
We were talking about that the other night. There's about 150
now.
Yeah,
so even if you can't get to rehab yet, go to a meeting.
Go to a meeting and
meet
just,
some sober people.
You know, go with the open mind.
There you go.
You pick something up. I know.
Oh, open-minded. That's a great thing to think about.
That's all it took for me, just to be open-minded.
That's it. Be open-minded. Well, thank you for coming and being so open and candid. We appreciate it. Everybody in the tri-state, thank you for tuning in. You can hear Jose on www.lisaseifcares.net in the podcast. You can call us here at 424-1400 if you have any questions for Jose or any of us here at Radio Rehab anytime. Thanks for tuning in. And between now and next week, don't forget to do the next right thing.
WEOA, Evansville Henderson.